This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DeFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 172 of the Muscles and Management Podcast. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe if you haven't already. Really appreciate it. Keep sharing it, sending it to your friends, reposting it on Instagram or any quote you like, or Twitter, tag, me and whoever the guest is. It really helps get the show out there, and we really appreciate the feedback. Super excited today to welcome on Chad Longworth. If you don't know who Chad is, if you're not directly in the baseball community, Chad is doing an excellent job out in Texas of developing baseball players and has a really cool approach to, how he emphasizes the strength and power needs for baseball players and is in that quote-unquote new school of development when it comes to getting baseball players to throw hard or hit the ball further, emphasizing that type of stuff to get to the next level. And he has a really cool culture at his facility. And I just love his social media presence and the honesty and authenticity that he brings to, sharing what he believes in and helping further the game of baseball and development. And I think even for people that are, on the strength conditioning side of things that are listening, you can get a lot from what he talks about regarding the importance of strength training for baseball players, which can really mirror the importance of strength training for any sport that your athlete plays. So I think this is going to be a great episode that you guys are going to enjoy a lot, just hearing from a sport coach and the importance that strength conditioning and speed training play in developing not only baseball players, but better athletes, more powerful athletes as a whole. So I think you guys are going to love this one. Let us know what you think. As I said before, it really means a lot to get feedback. So sit back, enjoy. Chad was great, and I'm excited for you guys to hear this one. And as always, I will talk to you next week. Peace. All right, everyone. Super excited to welcome on Chad Longworth. He is returning the favor to me. I was on his show a couple weeks ago, and I told him I would love to have him on. So I'm glad we were able to do this. And Chad, I appreciate you taking the time. I'm really excited to have you on.
Yeah, man. I don't think your podcast is released to the public yet, but we had a great conversation. And
it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I always enjoy talking to fun and interesting people, and you're definitely one of those guys.
Well, I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. You're really good at hosting. It's fun, laid back. I think, and we talked about this. We talked about this a little bit when I was on your show, but I think I did. All these interviews start to like mesh together into one blob in my mind. But we spoke a little bit about like just the idea of making shows unscripted and just kind of having fun and seeing where the conversation kind of takes us. And I think it. The listeners appreciate it. Like, that's actually one of the biggest compliments or the biggest positive feedback pieces that I've gotten. It's just the idea that, like, hey, it seems organic and natural and not forced.
Yeah, I think that's important. I'm just better in that format. Like, I don't like being questioned. And so, I think I heard Rogan say this recently. It's the format of you and I were like sitting in a bar talking and we're just letting people listen.
And yeah, it makes it fun. Like. You never know where it's going to go. And I enjoy it far more as a host than like the pressure I would put on myself to do like crazy outlines and whatever. Cause I felt like I had to do that because I don't even know if it was like the first person, like one of the first bigger guests that I've had on, like you all have those coaches that you ask to come on the show and you're like, oh damn, I can't believe I'm having this person on the show, right? Yep. And they're like, oh, do you have an outline for me? And then you're thinking like, well, shit, like that must be like an industry standard. Like I better make sure I have that because this is like X person with a big following. They're a serious person. Like this is, going to be huge. And you end up finding out a lot of the time that they ask you that because they feel like they want to be prepared and they're actually more comfortable if there isn't one.
Yep, for sure. No, I totally get that. Like when I ask people, about my podcast and they always ask, is there anything particularly you want to talk about? I'm like, no, I just want to kind of talk to you as a dude who I've enjoyed. And you were the same way when I asked you, just a dude that I enjoyed on Twitter. And then you just get to have a more organic conversation, around the Twitter account,
And so that's cool too. I like doing that. Like I like, You know, I sometimes go through the person's tweets, and you have a bunch. Actually, I might pull out my phone in a little bit, and we'll go through some of your tweets. I think that'd be fun to kind of talk through some of those.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I think I, the first thing I definitely want to ask you, because weeks go by and I try more energy drink flavors. Yep. I got a couple new ones for you, and I also kind of want to see where you've been in your energy drink journey. Yep. But two new Bang flavors that I tried. So I told you this when I was on your show, but we try to have two different ones. So I basically go to Vitamin Shop and I'll buy two 12 packs, basically just for me and Julian. Everyone who listens to the show knows who Julian is by now. And he was a Bang veteran, or at least knew more about them than I did when I started drinking them. So I would say, hey, like, what flavors do you like? Like, what should I get? So I would pick two different ones, two 12 packs. They would last for several weeks, and then I get two other 12 packs. So this week this most recent one, I got Cherry Blade Lemonade.
Yeah.
And then I got Purple Guava Pear, I think it is.
Yep.
And the Cherry Blade Lemonade is phenomenal. Okay. Like, I'm a big fan, and I think it was also like I first tasted it, and it's got a nice aftertaste. Like, it doesn't, the flavoring hits you towards the end.
Yep.
And the Purple Guava Pear is solid. I'm not going to say it's like my favorite of all time, but it's pretty good. So I wanted to see your opinion on those.
So I haven't had, oddly enough, I was at the gas station Sunday because I'm going on vacation. So I had to load up on energy drink reviews while I'm out of town. So I had to do a bunch on Sunday.
Yeah.
And Purple Guava Pear, as I'm flipping through the spreadsheet that the guy does for me every time I do one, it wasn't on there. And I've done so many that I can't really remember them particularly. So I haven't done that one. Oddly enough, I have
it's
not
good.
Done
in my Purple opinion, Guava Pear. It's not one where, like, if I go out to the store and they're all in line in front of me, because, like, I'm not at the gym and I want to just get one on a weekend or something. Like, I'm not going to get that one specifically, but I would have it. Like, it's good. Like, I enjoyed it. But, like, I told you, like, and we disagreed on this last time, like, you weren't a huge Miami Cola guy. You thought it was okay. Like, I really liked that. Or did you like it? I forget.
No, it wasn't my favorite.
It was or it wasn't?
Was not.
Okay.
It was not my favorite.
Yeah, so I just like it because it's simple, and it kind of does, to me at least, taste like Coke. And I think it's because I don't drink a lot of regular Coke. So, like, a regular Coke drinker might not say that because they know the exact taste of Coke.
Sure.
But for me, it was like, oh, that's refreshing. I like that. We talked about, like, pina colada a lot. And I'll look for those. If I go out to, like, a 7-Eleven, like, those are usually, like, some of the first I look for. And then I told you last time, I love the, I think it's Orange Creamsicle Rain.
Yep.
I thought it was really good. Well, have you had any new ones the last couple of weeks that you're a fan of?
I tell you, man. The adrenaline shock drinks, I don't know if they're where you are. They seem to be popping up everywhere now.
I'm definitely going to be searching them now.
They are all, they're like Bang, except, and then we may have talked about this. I know I talk about this in the 2-minute energy drink reviews I do every day. The Bang have a really candy flavor to them. And the adrenaline shocks are just a lot smoother to me. They're very good. I've enjoyed... There was a peach one I did recently, really good. I did a watermelon one last week, I think, that was really good. I've liked them all. You know, the Bangs, I've gone up and down on Bang, but the adrenaline shock have been all solid.
I'm intrigued. I'm going to look into it for sure.
It's going to be gay.
I want to put a disclaimer out there too, because I've been going back and forth on this. I'm trying to get into TikTok a little bit, and I'm like bouncing back. I mean, not that I owe anybody anything, because all my other platforms, I just put a lot of, like, actual quality info out. So if I want to have a little more fun on TikTok, it's whatever. But I do want to at least build enough of a platform with some more viral stuff, and then have enough people where I could, like, spread some good information too. Cause I think there's definitely room for that on there. But I'll say this, like, I made a video, yesterday, or this Sunday, cause whenever, by the time this airs, it won't be yesterday, but I made a video and it was like a joke about, like, oh, they say caffeine's bad for you. And it's like me, like, with a voiceover with a song. And it's like basically saying, I don't care. I'm drinking the Bang. I will tell you this, like, it is one of those things where you try to give a little bit of a do as I say, not as I do type of warning to your athletes. Cause we are adults. Sure. You know, we're not growing bodies. We're bigger than most of the kids. Like, I know me specifically, I'm 260 pounds. Like I can handle a lot more caffeine than a 145 pound 15 year old that I train. So I do want to put that out there for the listeners. Like
disclaimer. Yes.
Yeah. Like I think that's important. Yep. Like we do have a big following and people look up to us. And then me being a strength coach specifically, like I have a responsibility for that. I feel like,
And I say it in jest a lot, but I really mean it. It's like, be careful with these things.
Yes.
Be careful with these things. You know, like those adrenaline shocks have 300 milligrams of caffeine. It would not be good for, like you said, a 150 pound 16 year old to be, you know, scarfing down a 300 milligram energy drink.
Like, and I know they're going to do it. So I try to give them, I try to teach them like, hey dude, you're a buck 40, like have half of a bang. Like you don't need the whole thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Like
for sure.
Try to save it for tomorrow or make your life, make it easier. Like if you can't trust yourself to not drink the whole thing, as soon as you open it, dump half of it into the garbage and then finish the rest. Like just then
finish the rest for sure. Yeah. That's
yeah. And I tell my kids that they're like, I'll coach. Like it's just, if there's a, we actually are my facility. I don't see a lot of kids using pre-workout, which is nice.
Yeah.
Because you try to tell them like, listen, if you're sleeping and eating enough, you don't need it. But like, I do understand sometimes these poor kids are like, some of my kids practice hockey till like 10 PM and then have to get up at 5:30 for school. So like they sit there all day and they come to work out at 3 and they're just drained. And I'm like, I try not to be a hypocrite. Cause I know if I was in that situation, I would do it, but
for sure.
I didn't drink coffee till I was 22 years old.
No doubt. Me either. I didn't
not purposely like my, it's not like my parents didn't allow me to drink it growing up. It was just not something I looked to. Like when I was in college, I'd have Red Bulls, but like I wasn't a coffee person.
No, me either. You know, when I was playing pro ball, I didn't drink a lot of caffeine. I don't even think pre-workout was a big thing then. I mean, I'm kind of showing my age a bit, but pre-workout wasn't even a big thing.
The first big pre-workout was NO Explode, if you remember that.
I do. And that was
bad.
Right around the time that,
for good reason.
Like right around the time that, you know, I was in that world.
So not to make you feel old, but I was given, so my dad had a friend or a mentor of his when he was growing up that, in addition to whatever he did for his regular, you know, daily job, also did some training and was a trainer. And he was a pretty well-known guy in that world. And he had some powerlifters he worked with and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, when I was in high school going into my senior year and I wanted to get a little extra serious with my strength training, you know, he brought me out to this guy and he got me on like eat this to take this, whatever. And one of the things he gave me was that original NO Explode pre-workout. Yep. That stuff made you, I felt like my face was melting.
Yep.
And it was insane. Yeah. But they banned it, I think, because kids were these idiot kids. And this is back to like what I'm saying is like would take it and go run on the treadmill and a kid had that cardiac arrest and he passed away.
Yeah.
So be careful, guys, man. If you're listening to this stuff, disclaimer, we're adults. We're bigger than you. One, we're not growing and developing bodies. Two, we're not saying it's the ultimate best thing for us either, but you know, if in moderation with stuff, you can get away with it. And look up guidelines on caffeine consumption. Three, if that's, I think number three, that the point I'm bringing up, and four, make sure you're getting enough water, at least if you're having caffeine in higher amounts. So those are all my disclaimers and try to rely on 8 hours of sleep and quality nutrition and not become a pre-workout or, energy drink junkie, unless you are like older, like us and you work too much and, you know,
for sure. You got kids and
learn from our mistakes.
Yeah, for sure. No question. But you're right. You know, like a few drinks of this or a few drinks of that, it's not going to hurt you. And, you know, caffeine is shown to increase performance in short bursts.
It's totally fine. I think it's just overdone. Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing we need to like.
Yeah, don't drink an entire bang.
We're not nutcases. I don't think we talked about it. Like for the size of the person I am, I have a coffee in the morning. I have a black cold brew in the morning. And then I have a bang 7 hours later. I don't really, it's not like I'm, you know, having three bangs a day. Like
me too. No, me too. I'm a coffee in the morning and then a white monster, which is only 125 milligrams of caffeine, which is like another cup of coffee basically.
Yeah.
And that's it. I do an energy drink review and take like five drinks of whatever I'm talking about that day. And that's it. Like, I don't ever drink any more than that.
Yeah, no, me neither. That's the most I'll go. Like if I have that bang in the afternoon, and that's another thing too. I limit those to the weekdays.
But I'm like, I'm 220. Seldomly. I'm 220. So
seldomly I'll have it on the weekend if like I really want to, but I try to just stick to just coffee on the weekends, you know, and make that like just like a Monday through Thursday or Monday through Friday thing. And like I said, the water too. I'm drinking 150 ounces of water a day.
Yep.
So like it flushes it out and it helps. And
I'm a very hard person to hydrate. I always have been my whole life. Hydration has always been an issue for me.
But so you just don't enjoy water?
No, I do. It's just I just don't hydrate well. Like I for whatever reason. So I've found in my own habits that if I do a liquid IV every other day and then water the day, I hydrate better. Like
interesting. You know,
not to get like too graphic, but like my pee color is more consistently hydrated than if I just do water.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess from you saying that makes me think about me personally. I don't have much of an issue with that. Like if I'm going water strong throughout the day, like it's pretty clear. Like it literally looks like water coming back out. I've never had an issue with that. It's interesting.
I have always been like that, though. Mm. I was like that as a player. Just don't hydrate real easily.
Yeah. What are you, so you're just like me, and we talked about this when I was on your show. How many, you know, young athletes, high school, and, you know, I got, so we work with a lot of middle school and high school, and then during the, during the breaks of college and during the summer, a lot of college kids come in.
Yep.
But like once December rolls around and colleges are on break, I'll have like 20 something to 30 college kids come back mixed in with all the high school and middle school. So like you see a lot and you hear a lot of funny stuff from them and what they're doing. Like when it comes to the nutrition side of things, and you know, the habits you see your athletes developing, if you had to give like tips to any coaches listening or any even athletes, like what certain things would you, you know, advise kids to try to start with if they're trying to get something on track, like basic stuff, like we're not nutritionists or anything, but like,
no,
what are you like, let's say just time management or like you're working with baseball players, like, I don't know, any type of things you've learned over your career, like anything like that.
I mean, you know, they just don't eat enough, really.
Yeah.
I mean, they just anything. I think they get lost too in like eating the right things.
Yeah.
And while that's important, it's like, dude, if you just eat a couple hamburgers, like eat anything. Like you are an athlete. If you just eat anything, it'll be good for you, or it'll be beneficial for you. You know, especially if you're trying to put on weight and you're trying to, you know, consume some calories.
Don't even be real too, food, right? Like,
yeah. Like, don't be.
No, you're not like, saying go out and like slam McDonald's every day. It's just not like,
every day. No, but it's like you can eat. You don't have to have this. I think people see like these disciplined diets that people have. And
it's unrealistic. Like, all this clean.
It's
eating.
One of these things. It's like, well, I can't do that, so I'm not going to do anything. And it's like, yes. No,
yeah,
no, like do like try to eat the right things, but in a pinch. Yeah, you got to eat a couple hamburgers, whatever. Just eat. Just consume food. Like
you try to get so perfect and then you don't do anything, right? Like
you don't do anything. And it's like it's that way in a lot of things. It's like you get crippled by perfection. And so they end up not doing anything. And it's like that's a terrible plan. It's no wonder you can't put on weight. A, you don't know how many calories you burn. And B, you don't know how many calories you consume.
And you can work around, you know,
macros
stuff like
and
that.
All these other things. It's like you're like 15, man. Just eat a lot.
And it's never going to be easier than when you live at home with your parents, right? Like you could talk about this. You played pro ball. Like I played in college. Like on road check. I remember going out to California for baseball 10 days, and like three or four nights, maybe I think it was three nights. We just had Papa John's was our option for dinner.
Yep.
But I remember like when we got to the. On the trip, we had a fridge in the room, and like I knew a lot of my other teammates weren't going to be huge in using it. So we went to like Target or wherever we went that first day, just because we wanted to buy stuff and whatever. And I bought like, you know, some packs of turkey breasts, like the packaged ones, and like a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I had that stuff there. So on the night where like we had to have Papa John's, I could have a couple slices of pizza, but then like have some of the packages of turkey breast to get some protein, like you know, creative and also just be cognizant. Like, I think if you're aware of like I knew going in that might be a possibility. So I grabbed a couple packs of that stuff, right? Like, understand like, hey, I'm going to be at school all day. What can I bring? Or where am I going? Like, we're lucky that the, you know, facility is in an ice rink that has a full functioning, like, restaurant basically, where the kids can get rice bowls with chicken and, everything's kind of like homemade. It's definitely helpful. And you got to take advantage of like knowing your, where you are and where you're going and all that.
Oh yeah. When faced with the option of eating the correct things or eating like crap, definitely eat the correct things. But, you know, by and large, just eat, man. That's what kids just don't eat enough. You don't eat enough of anything. And so, yeah, for sure. No,
I agree with you 100%. Like if you have the option, like I hate one of these, like these are only option scenarios, but if you're leaving school and so like, I remember I had kids training and the dad was like, I felt bad. I had to take the kids to like Wendy's, but like, I'm not letting them train on an empty stomach. Like they have to come to you. And I know like getting something in them is better than nothing at all. You know, so like, I agree, but if you have the option of no food or like grabbing whatever is near you, grab whatever is near you to start at least in the most basic sense. And then you could start to get towards like the prepping and, you know, maybe having stuff made before the week and all that kind of stuff.
And a lot of times, you know, that's not, it's just sometimes just not realistic. And
oh my God, no, it's not.
It goes back to
do that.
It goes back to, you know, just don't be crippled by perfection in anything. It's like in strength conditioning, you know, I think people get crippled by the perfect exercise selection or the perfect lift order, or the perfect sets and reps. And it's like, just stick to your consistency, man. Like all that stuff is great and it's good to know, but you know, not picking up weight for 3 days is not a good plan. I don't care what the exercise is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, so much paralysis by analysis. And
there's a lot of information on the internet.
Yeah.
So it's easy to get information overload today.
Then you look like, and I found myself having this issue when I first started is like making the first program and the first person you're going to train and just stare at your computer screen, just knowing I have no idea where to start. Just because like, what if I miss doing this? Or what if I miss doing that? I so much am thankful for not being in that position anymore, because you end up doing something long enough and you see enough results come in that you know what your general process is. So you don't have that, because you kind of just like know what to get going with right away. But I think, like you said, there's so much, like how many times do you see, or does someone see a hitting coach or a pitching coach post a drill and they're like, oh my God, I've never seen that in my life. What am I missing? And then they start like either doing everything around that drill, or they start like doubting everything they're already doing because they're not doing that drill. And it's like, it's a snippet, dude. Like you don't know the whole picture.
Yeah. And again, where I work today, you know, I told the guy, you know, it's the quote, and I think I posted it recently. It's like, methods, there are millions, but principles, there are few. Like kind of once you underline what principles you're gunning for in strength conditioning or hitting or pitching, then you can start to like have some freedom to go creative ways and not get lost away from the principles. I think what people do when they chase drills or they chase crazy exercises, or that, it's like, this really has no fundamental principle in what I'm trying to do. You know, I see you post things about, you know, superior Alvin Kamara standing on a half Boshu ball, you know, catching, I don't know, French fries with his left hand and juggling plyo balls with his right hand. And it's like, I don't even know what principle we're addressing here. And then you'll see people all over the internet doing it. It's like, here we go.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point too. Like even with you, like you train a lot of hitters. Like that's like, that's your thing, right? Like you train hitters, and it's like, you can see, I often like, I remember looking at this over the years, and I think about this a lot differently now because I know so many people that do it in a high level and how things have changed and how organized stuff is. But like, what is your plan going into like how many hitting coaches do you think just have a kid? And I think it's mostly in that structure where, you know, the lesson structure, which I think is definitely being phased out, but it's like, Lesson comes in. All right, tee, hit the tee, soft toss, hit the soft toss, batting, BP, whatever. Like, what are you working on? Like, did the instructor have a plan going into that training session, or was it just random tools? Like, I hate to, you know, and I don't hate to do it. Screw it, because I don't really care at this point. But like that whole teacher man crowd, like, you see 652 implements on the floor, right? And sometimes I wonder, it's like, did you have like a process in like where you're trying to get with these implements? Like, did you sit down and say, okay, I'm working with a 15-year-old. We hit day one. I saw this, 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 and this. And over the next 6 weeks, I'm going to lay out our training and use certain tools. If you want to use the tools, it's fine. Like, I'm not saying that's like should be all you're doing, but like,
we got a bunch of them.
Have a friggin' plan, man. Like, did you got into Johnny's coming to you for an hour today? Why was it structured the way that it was? What end goal are we trying to get to?
What gets lost in a lot of that arena is, what is your plan to connect all of this to the game?
Yes.
You know, like, there's no plan.
There's no end goal. They don't have an end goal.
There's no plan to connect this to the game at all. And what only matters in all these athletes is that they play well in the game. And so, you know, for me, most of the people we have live, it's like the consulting work that I do on Mondays with school. It's like, you really don't have anybody that land right in the bat speed bucket, which is not normal for me. And so most of our time is spent building underlying bat speed skills. And then we try to connect these skills to the game because they got to go play. And I mean, that's really on a day to day what I do. It's like, we got to improve bat speed because they got to be able to move explosively and athletic and go fast. And then we got to connect it right to the game so that when the game comes, they're ready. They're not, you know, they're not coming back saying, well, I need more of X, Y, and Z drill that has nothing to do with the game. You know, the Allen Iverson, the actual game when it matters.
Not practice.
And they and they think that if they do this, all this stuff, that somehow magically it's going to connect to the game, and it never does. And it's like, you know, the founding principle of everything we do is to help athletes compete well in the game when it actually matters. You know, guys in your gym, you want to help them when the game starts, and whatever sport they're playing. It's like, they got to be able to play well. You know, what are the underlying principles to help them play well? As hitters, you know, good grief, you name one, there's 10 other guys on the internet just like that. They're just putting stuff out there, and it's like, how does this connect to the game again? Have we lost sight of the game?
Yeah, and it's like, well, it's like, even like, I had Jeff Leach on the show, and we talked about, like, you know, point of contact, and then
he's
like
great,
like exit velo with certain balls in different zones, just like five basic things to do so that you can then say over the next 4 weeks, here's my plan to get this hitter better. Here's my plan to get this athlete better in strength training. Like, you have to have a plan. Like, I think it's something that even gets taken for granted in the S&C field, because like everybody feels like, oh, we should definitely have a program, right? But it's like in sport training, like, I feel like that doesn't always get thought about as much. And we really should have a strength conditioning approach in terms of that planning when it comes to skill development in sport. And I think it would be helpful. And I think the best coaches out there are doing it. Like, you would look and say, okay, we're using overload, underload training and strength conditioning people. Like, if you don't follow baseball, it's the equivalent of me saying, like, we're going to do loaded jumps, or we're going to do band assisted jumps to go faster. Yep. Like, based on the
Downhill sprinting, you know, stuff like that.
Based on the testing I did on the vert, what do I need? Like, okay, maybe that 13-year-old just needs to do regular box jumps. And maybe that 13-year-old needs to just get a bat in their hands and learn how to swing hard. But there's going to be the time when that 13-year-old is now 16, and you need to say, okay, over the next 6 weeks, what's my goal? What am I trying to get better at? And like, what did I assess to make that decision? And like, if you don't have that base, like, what are you going to do?
Oh, yeah. Like, today's work, I told the guys that it would be a complete waste of your practice economy time to spend much of it on bat speed work. I said, you're going to make the most, you know, you're going to get your most production out of what you need to do if you just spend it on, you know, improving swing plane and impact, positive impact, and, you know, creating balls, more balls in the air, you know, more hard hit balls in the air.
And I don't want to be a hypocrite either, because I know we said paralysis by analysis, just get going. That's fine. Make a decision and go with it.
Yep. Go with it. Yep.
And so then step one,
we have the
decide
tools.
What there's you want to do. right?
Yeah. There's no reason in 2021 with the tools that we have that are even affordable that you should not be able to at least track your progress in skill design.
And have a plan. There's got to be organization of some sort. Like I say all the time.
Preconditioning, you use a stopwatch, the weight, you record the weight.
Yeah. And all of that. Yes. But even more than that, it's like every 6 weeks we plot out what our goal is for a training cycle.
Yep.
And I think there needs to be some of that in sport. Cause I feel like, especially in like, skill development in sport, it's like a lot of it again is like what looks cool, what's going to get a good post on social media. So like, what drill can I do that gets 200 likes on Twitter? But then it's like, okay, well, you know, why did I do that drill? Did I do that drill just because it was going to get a lot of likes on social and I saw it like from, you know, a leader in the industry, or do I have any idea why they did it? Did like it coincide? Right. Like I talked about when Jeff mentioned the like four or five basic assessments he does, you could even just use a regular pocket radar for. Like, did I do this top hand, small, short bat drill because they have a weak point of contact on inside pitches? I don't know, whatever the hell it is.
Yep.
You know, is it for that reason? Like, what does it tie into? Like, what's the hierarchy?
What are the underlying principles of the matter, for sure?
Yeah. And I feel like, I'm sure you see this with competition and people you see on social all the time, that's really lacking in skill development, wouldn't you say?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt, because I still think a good majority of people, and Jeff is certainly not one of these people, that have a hard time. You don't train to the metrics, certainly, but the metrics and the technology can guide you in a direction to where you can make more informed decisions about what you're going to do. And I think people on the skill side, hitting particularly, still don't really know how to manage the greater snapshot that technology can provide you, such as a bat sensor that's going to give you simple measurements of swing time, bat speed, how well you accelerate the bat, do you arrive on plane. I mean, those are simple things, and it's like we kind of end up throwing the baby out with the bathwater because the sensor doesn't tell the story that we want to tell. We want to just pitch the drill on the Twitter, right? And a lot of people are on Twitter, and I realized this years ago, it's like they are on Twitter to get the approval of other, I use my quote fingers, guru people.
Yeah.
They're not here to you know, share their value or share their principles or how things are done. It's just like they want to say smart things or do stuff like you're talking about, just to impress other people in the industry. And it's like, that's not the point of this, I don't think.
Yeah, no, it's very true. Like, how many times, like, I've even seen stuff, like, the coaches that I've gotten certifications from, like, a guy like Joe DeFranco, like, has a certification, and people are, like, trying to use, don't get me wrong, when I first started out, I was going through his books and trying to, like, work backwards and figure out why he did the stuff he did. Years later, I'm very inspired by him, but our programs would look completely different. And it's like, you know, where are you trying to go? Like, I think that's a problem too. It's because like everybody wants to find a way to get known on social media, right? And I feel like you got to stop saying like, here, I'm doing this drill that so-and-so posted because you want to retweet, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing whatever.
Yep.
You're going to get more of a following on social media if people identify you as a leader and someone who's doing something the way they want to do it, because they feel like they can learn from you. Not that you're like a poor man's version of the other guy. Right.
Right. No, I agree. And, you know, it's funny. I think Zach Gacant said this a couple days ago when he was younger, in his younger strength conditioning days, he copied like West Side Barbell and something else. I can't remember exactly what it was. And he's like, I made mistakes because I tried to blend those two things. And, you know, maybe it would have worked if I'd have done it differently, yada, yada, yada. But I think even as a young trainer, my initial thought was like, yeah, but what did you learn from copying those things? And I think people are afraid to copy other people's work because it's like, I don't want to copy him. It's like, copy him, and then it'll become your own thing. That's like what you just said. It's like the DeFranco guy. It's like I copied his work, and then it just became, as I learned more and more the underlying principles, it's become its own thing now that is yours.
And people are going to know if you have bad intentions. Don't be afraid of like, if you have bad intentions, it's obvious. Like I
used to get messages from hitting coaches because, you know, I've put a lot out there, and they're like, do you get mad when people steal your stuff and claim it as their own? It's like, no, because I wouldn't put it out there if I was going to get mad. Like, I don't mind.
Well, okay. Yes, but do you agree if they saw you doing something, if you genuinely were the first person to do, like you thought of, like, there's got to be, I know you definitely have had this, where there's four or five variations you've used where you actively thought about that and hadn't seen it before. Yep. And you put it out there and someone legitimately was like, I came up with this months later when you knew they got it, they saw it from you. Right. There's like a right and wrong way to do it.
Sure, like, yeah.
That's annoying. Like, don't be that person. If you're a coach and you want to like get some, you know, following on social media, that there's no easier way than to get it to alienate people. Like, for example, there was a guy that literally, and this is really egregious, but like he got the DeFranco cert and he took the, I'm not even joking, like certain blurbs and things that he had said on instructional videos and I typed them on his website. Like, that's just stupid. Like, it's just, you look like an idiot. Like, don't do it. And you're also like, that's a really good way to not make friends. You know, like just be like good, cool about it. Say, hey, you know, you just do it. Like, there's nothing wrong.
On the skill side, for sure. There's, on the skill side, I've always tried to give credit to Driveline because a lot of the underlying ideas of what I initially got into was because of them. And I think a lot of coaches are like that. Driveline's done a lot on the skill side. But today, I doubt what the work that we do is the principles are exactly the same, but how we go about it is probably different. And that's a good thing. But it started because it's like they're doing something really cool and I think it's going to work for our players. I'm going to give it a shot. And then it just morphs into your thing. And I think that's okay. It's the Pablo Picasso, good artist copy, great artist steal. It's like, that's fine. But, you know, you'll make it into your own thing if you just keep continuing to learn. Because you can't just copy people forever. And you wouldn't be able to copy DeFranco forever because you're not learning anything. You would not be learning. You would not have learned anything from that cert if you were still just doing that workout.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It makes a big difference. Yeah.
You just continue to learn. While you're
by doing too, right? You got in front of athletes and you actually figured it out. Like, that was a big thing for me. Like, I'm looking at these books, you could take a cert as much as you want. Like, a guy can't explain his entire thought process to you in a couple months or a weekend, right? Like, I'm looking at this guy's book. I'm like, how did he get to this solution? How did he get to this? How did he get to this? And then, like, years later, I start to be like, oh, I get that now. Like, that makes sense, right? Sure. Like, you stumble upon it from just doing it and putting the pieces. Like, you can work backwards, that's okay. Like, I knew this guy was really good and highly regarded, so if I used a structure similar to his, it would be effective. And then I kind of learned why it was effective maybe a year later, or at least more of why it was effective.
Yep. And I think that's okay. I think everybody, you know, coaches want to feel like they come up with their thing. And it's like, yeah, this is original, but it's really not as good as that thing. And if I think we're all, you know, driven to help players be better, you know, take pieces from the best people and then it all becomes your own thing eventually. You know, if you have foundational principles, that's the thing. You got to figure out what your principles are. Like, what are the things, skill side, what are the things you're going to shoot for? Bat speed, because we know exit velocity is important. You know, swing plane, because we know hitting the ball in the air is important. Throwing the ball hard, because we know that being able to throw the ball harder in the strike zone buys you more leverage within the strike zone. You know, all those things, it's like you're just building, as a hitter, you're building leverage against pitchers, and as pitchers, you're building leverage against hitters, and those who have the most leverage, hopefully over the course of time, will be the most successful. It's like bat speed. Bat speed is not the be-all, end-all, but it does give you leverage in facing pitchers. If you have less of it, you have less time, which is not a good thing.
Yeah, I think it really all boils down at a certain point to just, you know, are you actively working with real people? And I think if you do that, especially kids, man, because kids are tough. Like, there's a lot to handle with them, and you have a lot of kids at the same time, and it's a lot to kind of be thrown into the trenches like that. Yep. If you can handle kids, you can handle a lot. Like, that's
yep.
And if you can handle implementing certain things and programming and whatever with certain kids, you know, that is going to do a lot for you, in my opinion.
No doubt. You know, I see your stuff on social media, and you posted something a few days ago, maybe on Instagram, maybe on Twitter. I can't remember about having just, you know, you don't have to have 2 hours on the weight room. It's like we kind of have these four basic stations, and this is what we do.
Yeah. No, I talked about like one of my junior hockey teams that's in season. Like, how do we use stations with 25 kids to get things done in a timely manner and effectively?
And I try to do the same thing on the skill side. You know, we have, like, again, most of our time is spent in the bat speed bucket. So we have, you know, a rotational power med ball station. We have some mobility and side bend stabilization stations. We have some overspeed and swing speed stations. We have a couple of things that happen inside of the cage. So again, time management. We hit all the important things that we need to hit in a timely manner. We can manage a lot of players, because I think people overstayed on the skill side, one-on-one attention and needs. While that is true in small samples, it's like once you kind of get the framework of what we're trying to do, you know, and this is probably true of you in that setting, you want them to own the training. Like, this is your training. This is not me holding your hand the whole time, showing you what to do every day you come in here. So there's some personal responsibility in this.
Yes, the autonomy has to be there. And, you know, at a certain point, if they don't want to do it and you're trying to tell them to do it, then it's just not going to. You have to focus your time on the kids that want to. Like, I think that's a big one, too, that I think a lot of coaches need to understand is, like, you got it. You're going to just diminish your ability to help the ones that really want to get better if, you know, you're focusing over and over and over. It's like giving a cheating ex too many chances, right? Like, you're going to just miss out on the other people out there that are good and you can have a good relationship with, right?
Yep.
Once, maybe twice, okay. Maybe you stretch it to three times because they have a lot of potential. But, like, after a while, it's like, all right, dude, just keep screwing things up. I'm going to try to help you the best I can when you actually want to be helped. But my energy is going to go towards the kids that are just, like, really, really locked in and have attention to what we're doing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, and I think, you know, I think in that setting, and not a lot of people – you know, I might have said this when we did our podcast. It's like, I'm not a one-on-one lesson person. We do all small groups. And I think you find out a lot about your kids in a small group. You know, if you're a parent, you know, if your kid shows up and, like, is not engaged in a small group and is not competitive in a small group or gets overwhelmed in a small group, then how are they going to be successful in a game? Like, how are they ever going to? Even the most, we could do 1,000 one-on-one lessons. And if they can't function when the game matters within those environments, like, what was the point of any of this?
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned this before too, like, end goals, right? If you're on the skill development side, if is it helping the athlete, you know, hit the baseball in the game, if you're on the strength and conditioning side, is what I'm doing when they're younger, just improving their overall output and their athleticism and movement ability. As they're older, is it more specific and locked into the actual demands of their sport? Like, those are the questions you need to ask yourself. Like, if what we're doing doesn't stack up and contribute, at least in varying degrees, depending on our goal, to what we're doing or to the sport the athlete plays, then what's the point, right? Or, like, it's not as useful as it can be.
Yeah. I think you posted about that on social not too long ago also, about that thing. It's, I don't even remember what you were. It was maybe hockey players and, like, skating and maybe doing some lateral bounding or something. I don't remember exactly. It was good, though.
Yeah, no, well, thank you. I talk about that all the time. Like, you know, don't get too cute with it, trying to mimic things to sport, but, like, know the basic demands of the sport, of the athlete you're working with. And understand, or know, like, a high school age hitter odds are going to see X amount of velocity, and I got to prepare them for that, or this type of level of breaking ball, like, whatever it is.
We got to see that and learn to, you know, there's a lot of, I use my quote fingers again, learning to do against that. It's like you as a player, you know, you were a guy who probably hit the ball hard enough, who probably swung the bat fast enough. There were probably other needs. It would have been irresponsible for me on the skill side to say
I needed to be in front of a machine throwing really hard and deception and timing. If I had that, I was great.
You need to connect to the game more in practice.
Yep.
You know, And you probably didn't just connect to the game more in practice.
And that's why I'm so passionate about people like you. And that's why I made a decision pretty early on. Like, that's the side I want to be on in this whole battle of old school versus new school, because I suffered because of too much old school.
For sure. There was too much like prescriptive design to you. It's like, well, hey, here, let's go over here on this tee and let's do this day. And that's going to help you play in a game. It's like, no, man, like you just connect him to the task of the game.
Or let me just crush the front toss or like 30 mile an hour VP. Like, okay, no. I my swing mechanics are at a good point right now. And when I do make contact, it's going to go really far. But like when a guy's throwing 88 on the bump, I can't time up anything.
Yep. And I have no variability in my ability to time up anything. And just I'm not catching barrels at productive stuff. And I'm just not as good as I need to be in a game. And you know, people like myself, people like Caleb Abney, people like just take a lot of flack for saying, well, you're just throwing guys in there off the machine and telling them to figure out 95. It's like, that's not the truth at all, for one. But for two, you have to connect to the game, like in practice, all hitters. Some hitters need scaled down activities more. I think you said that earlier in this conversation. It's like it's the balance of scaling down activity and then scaling it up. You know, for novice players and then more advanced players, it's like an advanced player just can't do scaled down activities all the time. Like they just can't. They're not going to get any value from it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very true. And that's just like with training too. Like basics are great, but at a certain degree, you got to, you know, introduce more stimulus to the advancing athlete. And it's just all, it's all a process. And you're only going to know those things if there's a, and it goes back to what we said before, if there's a consistent assessment or retest process to decide when things need to change or when things need to make decisions need to be made, that's when you will know.
Yeah. No, totally. You know, I, the job that I have on Monday, I started last Monday and I went up there today and, you know, I've just been trying to like dig through his computer, his HitTrax computer and get an idea of his hitters, you know, physical abilities. And again, it's like, you need to spend all of your hitters hit the ball hard enough. Every single one of them there. That's not a tool that we need to spend. Obviously, adding more bat speed is important, but it's just not a tool you need to spend a whole lot of time on. So we're going to scale up and connect to the game. That's what I told him. I said, you know, most of your practice time needs to be adding some swing playing challenge and activities and that, but like connect to the game a lot, connect to the demands of the game a lot, you know, the timing element of the game. This particular team, I mean, this is what will be one of the best teams in the country this year. It was amazing. You know, to look at like the scatter plot of their point of impact on HitTrax, it gives you like a point of impact report. Like how consistently do you hit the ball in front of the plate or back to the plate? It was amazing. You were probably this player. I was probably this player. If you gave me four chances if you gave me like at least four shots to time a machine up and that was the same speed, and then you just let me hit it after that, I was going to hit the ball within a 6-inch range of all contact points. Yeah. And it's like, there's no, it's like, you don't even need to do that. Like you need to mix up the distance of the plate and do all these different things that the game demands, because your players are like these super tuned in computers that even in that practice design, they're not getting a lot of value from it. You know, that's the machine. That's the 88 mile an hour machine. My guess is you as a player probably would have done that too. You stood there long enough, you just start squaring it up over and over again.
But I remember really facing the 100 mile an hour pro batter machine. Like,
you start seeing really enough, timing the ball.
Yeah.
You know, you're really not timing the ball at that point. You're just defaulting. And you got to stay away from that. And especially hitting with such a variable skill as hitting. It's like it's the better you get, the more randomized and challenging the practice has to become.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, again, you got to have a plan and an idea to how to identify when these things need to happen. And if you don't, you're going to just fall down this rabbit hole of disorganization. And I say, it's not even a rabbit hole. It's like an avalanche, because it just starts to gain momentum. You're a little unprepared one day and then it starts to free fall until like, now I'm just guessing and now I'm just kind of throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. And as a coach, you're just not going to be able to deliver any quality work to your athletes that way. Or at least the athletes won't either. Like, they're not going to get any quality work if they're training themselves.
Yeah, I ask I asked Caleb Abney this one day. We were talking, and I said, you know, if you go see this particular hitting coach, when do we stop? You know, you got to coach my, let's use my own kids. You got to coach my kids every day for a year. When do we just like stop working on his swing? Like, when do we hit? You know, and there's that balance as a hitting coach. It's like, when is enough enough? You know, when do you go and just hit? And I think that's probably my underlying principle. It's like, we got to connect to the game a lot. Just that's my advice to coaches. It's like, connect to what the game demands.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to kind of wrap things up here. Connect to what the game demands. You should tweet that. I think that's a good one. Let me ask you this, wrapping things up here. And this was awesome. I really appreciate you coming on. One piece of advice for an athlete, one piece of advice for a coach. What would it be?
For a player, I think consistency and sacrifice. You're going to have to make sacrifices to get the amount of work in that you're going to need to get in to be really good at whatever sport you play. You know, and you got to be patient in that. You know, you got to work with urgency. Like, you're not going to be able to play tomorrow, but at the same time, being patient, knowing that all great things happen from when you build a large body of work. And so, and I'll use an example on the strength and conditioning side. Like, some days workouts don't need to burn to be beneficial. You know, it doesn't have to be the most physically taxing thing to be beneficial, you know, because you can't work that way every day, but you need to build a large body of work. For coaches, gosh, that one's probably harder. Be open-minded about things, but don't go down, learn what your principles are and don't go down every rabbit hole. Like, go down rabbit hole.
Have principles. Yeah.
Pick and choose what rabbit holes you go down, because there's a lot of rabbit holes you can go down on the internet. And if you don't have underlying principles, you're going to end up in a place that you just don't. You might abandon things that you like because you're going down rabbit holes you should have never been in the first place.
Yeah. And you can go, if you're seasoned enough to know what's good and what's not good, you can go down those because you can really, like, you know, be aware of the bullshit and what's not effective. Yep. But if you're just starting out, be really careful because, you know, if you're not grounded in principles, like, don't be tied to dogma. Don't be like, I'm going to avoid everything else because I believe in this one concrete thing. But, like, also kind of have – it's like a, you know, the bend don't break mentality. Like, you're going to never be able to stand up whatsoever if you have no principles. Don't be too rigid where you're going to snap if any kind of wind comes along, but be able to bend and kind of be in the middle on that.
Yep. You know, and it's like for me, you know, bat speed is one of our principles. And when I see things that could possibly benefit that, we'll chase it. But I see things and I'm like, that's not going to do anything in bat speed. That's not going to help any kid's bat speed at all. Like, how's that going to help them? So we don't chase that one, you know? So that's just one example of a principle. An anecdote and an opinion is not a principle.
Yep. Could not agree more. I think that was a really cool way to kind of tie things up. Do you have any other thoughts for us? Anything you want to say? But this was awesome overall. I really appreciate you coming on.
The White Monster is the goat energy drink. And so that's probably it. And then, you know, work hard, try to work every day and be patient and just keep going.
Absolutely. Chad, I want to thank you so much for coming on. This was awesome. Yeah, man. I really appreciate you taking the time. I love talking to you. We'll definitely have to do this again. Anytime you want me to come back on yours, I'd love to as well.
And, yeah, for sure.
I can't wait for that to come out because I think my followers will enjoy listening to it. So as always, thank you.
Yeah, dude.
All right. I will talk to you soon. I appreciate it.
All right, brother.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Muscles and Management brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jerry DiFilippo, signing off from the show that's changing how we view sports performance, training, and business.